From the United Nations in New York, the world in review. This is Don Barber reporting. In the news this week, the Security Council calls on the governments of Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina to allow the full deployment of the UN Rapid Reaction Force. The Rapid Reaction Force fires the biggest gun in its arsenal at a Bosnian Serb mortar position. The UN protests an incident in which thousands of refugees at the UN base at Tuzla airfield are shelled. The Security Council calls on the government of Zaire to reconsider and hold its declared policy of the forcible repatriation of refugees to Rwanda. The Council notes there's little overall progress in achieving a settlement of the situation in Abkhazia, Georgia. The UN Development Program releases its annual Human Development Report, ranking Canada as the top country in the world for life expectancy, education, and income. These are the stories in this week's World in Review. The Security Council has called on the governments of Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina to allow the full deployment and freedom of movement of the UN Rapid Reaction Force. The force, to be made up of over 12,000 troops, was sent to the Balkans in June to protect the UN peacekeepers. Council President Nugroho Wisnumurti of Indonesia.
This is the Council is deeply concerned at the implications of the continuous impediments to the functioning of the RRF for the effectiveness of the United Nations mission in the Republic of Bosnia and Herzegovina. It calls upon the government of the Republic of Croatia and the Republic of Bosnia and Herzegovina immediately to remove all impediments and to give clear undertakings concerning the freedom of movement and provision of facilities for the RRF in order that it may perform its task without further delay.
The Council's action is based on a letter from Secretary General Boutros-Ghali, in which he said that local Croat authorities in Bosnia had created substantial impediments to the deployment of the Rapid Reaction Force in areas under their control. None of the helicopters of the Air Mobile Brigade had been allowed to fly into Bosnia, and an artillery brigade designated for Mount Igman had been blocked for nearly 2 weeks. The Secretary General said a Rapid Reaction Force elements already inside Bosnia had been encountering continuous restrictions on their movements, adding that a total of 16 logistic convoys had been either delayed or blocked during the first 2 weeks of August. In a related development, the Rapid Reaction Force on Mount Igman has fired the biggest guns in its arsenal at a Bosnian Serb mortar position. The response came after an Egyptian observation post was directly targeted twice by the Bosnian Serbs. David Malam of UN Radio in the former Yugoslavia reports from Zagreb.
The first attack was 4 mortar rounds injured 6 peacekeepers. 4 were seriously hurt and have been evacuated by helicopter to split. So 1 for 4 was able to identify the direction the mortars came from. It couldn't determine the firing point. Later the ADIP was shelled again. This time the firing point was identified. And French 155mm guns fired 6 rounds at a BSA mortar position in the Southstone area. And before believes the position was hit, in any case it hasn't fired since. The effectiveness of the Rapid Reaction Force has been publicly questioned recently, but UNPROFOR spokesman Alex Ivanko says it performed just as it was supposed to.
It was a rapid and precise response, which we understand is what it was supposed to do, and that is to neutralize the Bosnian Serb army. Which position was the firing on UNPROFOR?
UNPROFOR spokesman Alex Ivanko in that David Barnum report. In other news, more than 3,000 refugees camped on the UN base at the Tuzla airfield were shelled in an incident the UN is describing as unconscionable. Remarkably, there appears not to have been any casualties. It's unclear who fired the shells, though the origin of the fire is assessed to be near Mount Vish, around the confrontation line with the Bosnian Serb army. The UN spokesman in Zagreb is Chris Gunness. The shelling occurred just a day before the refugees started leaving the airbase on buses, according to a Bosnian government relocation plan. They have been moving to housing in Tuzla. Meanwhile, the UN is making a strong protest about the shelling.
We contend the shelling of these defenseless people in the severest possible terms. They had already been ruthlessly hunted out of their homes and the further attack upon them is unconscionable, we can take the alarm about this event, given that thousands of refugees remain in the area.
It's been announced that 180 British and 90 Ukrainian peacekeepers in Gorazda are to be pulled out, but military observers will remain in the enclave. In a statement, Secretary General Boutros-Ghali said that the safe area was not being abandoned. He said that the UN remained committed to deterring attacks on Gorazda, but that the British government wished to withdraw its troops from the enclave, and attempts to replace them with peacekeepers from other countries had not been successful. The Ukrainians, he said, have been unable to function since they have been forcibly disarmed by Bosnian government soldiers. The Secretary General said the UN therefore had no choice but to deploy military observers in Gorazda, backed up by NATO air power. The Security Council has called on the government of Zaire to honor its obligations to refugees and to reconsider and halt its declared policy of the forcible repatriation of refugees to Rwanda. In a presidential statement, the Council said it views with deep concern the forcible repatriation of Rwandan and Burundian refugees by the government of Zaire and the increasingly tense situation in the region. Council President Nugroho Wisnumurti of Indonesia.
The Security Council considers that Zaire and the other states which have accepted refugees from Rwanda and Burundi make an important contribution in spite of the considerable difficulties created for them thereby to peace and stability in the region. Their contribution is of special importance in view of the genocide which took place in Rwanda and the possibility of further bloodshed in Burundi. The Council also notes the commitment of the government of Rwanda to take the necessary steps to facilitate the safe return of its nationals as soon as possible and encourages it to continue its effort in order to implement its undertakings in this respect.
The Council statement also supports the decision by the Secretary General to send the High Commissioner for Refugees to the region to engage in urgent discussions with the government of Zaire with a view to resolving the situation. It also encourages all governments in the region to cooperate with the High Commissioner for Refugees to achieve the voluntary and orderly repatriation of refugees. The government of Zaire has since suspended its policy of forcible expulsion. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Mrs. Sadako Ogata, whom the Secretary General asked to travel to Zaire in connection with the situation, is expected to begin her mission next week. We have a report from Marcia Ward in Rwanda.
UNHCR has made clear its opposition to this forced expulsion from camps in North and South Kivu. The refugee agency has also refused to help in the operation to move refugees from the camps in Zaire to the border with Rwanda. Mrs. Ogata is hoping to persuade Prime Minister Kengo Wadongo to lead international condemnation of this policy and halt the deportations. The Zairean Prime Minister, however, has claimed his country has broken no international conventions and the deportations were a matter of internal security.
United Nations officials say the forced repatriation could develop into a crisis that potentially threatens to destabilize the entire region. UN spokesman Fredeka.
It's estimated now that 10,000 refugees from Rwanda and Burundi have been expelled by Zaire since Saturday, including more than 5,000 today alone. There are also reports that more than 60,000 refugees have fled into the hills to avoid forced repatriation. UNHCR has appealed to the Zairean government to continue to provide asylum while working with the international community to promote the orderly return of these refugees.
The UN Security Council has noted that there has been little overall progress made in achieving a comprehensive political settlement to the situation in Abkhazia, Georgia. Council President Nugroho Wisnumurti of Indonesia.
The Council renews its call to the parties, in particular the Afghan side, to reach substantial progress in the political negotiations as a matter of urgency. The Security Council remains deeply concerned at the continued obstruction of the return of the refugees and displaced persons by the Afghan authorities, which is totally unacceptable.
the Council called on Abkhazian authorities to accelerate the return of refugees and to guarantee their safety. It also called on both parties to cooperate with the UN peacekeeping mission in the area. In another development, Secretary General Boutros-Ghali has welcomed an agreement between the President of Tajikistan and the leader of the Tajik opposition to extend the existing ceasefire agreement for 6 months. The protocol also outlines the main principles for establishing peace and national accord in Tajikistan. The next round of meetings between the two parties is scheduled for September 18th. Canada has been ranked the top country in the world for life expectancy, education, and income. This is the finding of this year's Human Development Report, the sixth issued by the UN Development Program, UNDP. Ranked second in terms of standard of living is the United States, followed by Japan, the Netherlands, and Finland. But rankings change when inequalities between men and women are taken into account. Then, Canada drops to number 8 and the United States to number 5. The top 4 countries for gender equality are the Nordic countries of Sweden, Finland, Norway, and Denmark. This year's report focuses on gender and concludes that despite increasing capabilities, women still face limited opportunities. The report recommends more action and less talk. It calls on governments to adopt specific policies to overcome discrimination in the law, to expand roles and opportunities for women and men at home and in the workplace, and to ensure that more women participate in top-level positions in government and the private sector. The report also calls for greater access for women to education, reproductive health care, and financial credit. The primary author of the report, Dr. Mahbubul Haq of Pakistan, is a special advisor to the UN Development Program.
I'm personally convinced that we'll reach an equality of opportunity, which will benefit everyone. It will increase global output. It will liberate the energies which are dormant. It will really create a far more peaceful and a far more harmonious society.
Establishing priority actions to promote the advancement of women and benefit society as a whole will be the central task of participants at the 4th World Conference on Women to be held from September 4th to the 15th in Beijing. Diane Bailey of UN Radio reports.
Organized 20 years after the first World Conference on Women was held in Mexico City in 1975, the Beijing Conference will take as its theme Action for Equality, Development, and Peace, which was also the theme of the United Nations Decade for Women from 1976 to 1985. The Beijing Conference will provide an opportunity for states to review progress since the last such event was held in Nairobi in 1985, when governments adopted by consensus the Nairobi Forward-Looking Strategies for the Advancement of Women to the year 2000. The strategies provided a framework for action at the national, regional, and international levels to promote empowerment of women and their enjoyment of human rights. One of the major challenges before the 4th World Conference on Women, reflected in the draft platform for action to be adopted, will be to envision ways and means of accelerating the application of the strategies. Conference Secretary General Gertrude Mongella of Tanzania has underlined that its mission is not further analysis, but a deeper level of action. This is Diane Bailey.
That ends this edition of The World in Review. The program was produced by the International Staff of Central News Section in the Department of Public Information. I'm Don Bob.